building up a generation. Plant seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real money radio.
Good morning and welcome to Real Money Radio. I'm Tanya Escobel with Cross Country Mortgage. Mortgage professional for over 30 years now, and my co-host in studio with me is Roy Matlock Jr., financial guru. That's all I can say.
That's perfect.
Yes, knows it all when it comes to the big financial game plan. So today, that must be our ghost in the studio. So today we are going to be talking about a complete financial game plan and how to get started. And so it's going to be a lot of information, but we're going to try to take baby steps one at a time to kind of give you an overview. And then if you would like to find out any more detailed information, you can always visit our website.
We have
our new website up and going, realmoneyradio.info.
Yes.
So realmoneyradio.info if you'd like to get some more information. So the complete financial game plan is what we're focusing on today. That includes a lot. It includes basics, includes real estate, includes long-term planning. But let's start with the basics, Roy. What do we got?
All right. So anytime I meet with people, first thing I try to do is get them on a solid path. And that solid path always is spend less than you make. And the way you do that is you get a good plan to set up a budget, and we'll give you some details on how to really go find that. But one of the first things I do if you're having trouble with your money is I tell you how much money you're making. And you either have an income plan or you have an outgo plan. And so we look at the income to begin with. And if you have a reasonable income that's solid, then what we want to do then is fire all of our bills. And what I mean by fire the bills, take a look at a list of all the bills and say to yourself, if I didn't have this bill right now, would I rehire it? And if some of them you can't get rid of, immediately, well, we do that with the idea that we get a gap between our income and our outgo. And then once we get on that, and there's a lot of keys to the budget, the first thing I always tell people is, if you're married, you have all your money going into one account, and then each of you have a debit card, and you move X amount of dollars each week into the debit, and you know how much you have, and your spouse knows how much they have, and then at the end of the week, you can look and see how much is left. And so even have a text message sent from the bank each day. And so at the end of the week, you're there. And then it's time to stop. And then we fund our emergency fund 3 to 6 months of liquid cash. That's to keep us from going in debt. If we have life happen, which it always does, I tell people we put that in a money market account. If you're a single income earner household, you might want to have more than 3 months, closer to six. If you're both working, chances are you're not going to both get knocked out at the same time. Then we look at debt, all right? And debt is good debt and bad debt. Mm-hmm. And good debt is something that's tied to something that appreciates. You just want to make sure that you don't overextend yourself in good debt. You can do that. And that would be like real estate or investment property, business, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But you want to eliminate bad debt. And when we eliminate the bad debt, how we do that is we make sure that the bad debt, credit cards, car payments, all that kind of stuff, we just make a decision. We're never going to do that. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. We plan for the car in advance. We don't, we're not charging, financing our mm-hmm. lunch and dinner for 30 years mm-hmm. on a credit card, which is mm-hmm. what people do. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we buy all the right insurance. We protect our income and our assets. Mm-hmm. And we have a basic. So,
okay. So let's kind of back up to the budget, establishing a budget. There's so many people that have never even done a budget. And the sad thing for me is they don't even teach you in school how to do a budget. You go through high school, you go through college, you can get a bachelor's degree, master's degree, and no one is teaching you financially how to do a budget, unless you're going to be a CPA or something.
Right.
Learn that. So in looking at doing a budget, I think a lot of times people procrastinate on it because they don't know where to start. They don't know where to begin, and it becomes overwhelming.
Right.
I think you just start simple. There's enough technology out there, softwares that would categorize from your bank account. Some of those would be an easy way just to kind of get started in the beginning stages. One thing about the budget, you were saying fire some of your liabilities that you have. Just going through my own bank account, they get you every single time, subscriptions. How much are you spending on subscriptions and you've got 20 of them in your cabinet and you just don't take the time to cancel the subscription. So subscriptions is something that's, you know, $20 or $30 here and there, or right. all these, you know, Hulu, Netflix, all of right. these little TV channels that just add up.
And they go in there and they do, you know, like, I don't like signing up for anything that's going to be automatic, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's me saving my own money.
Yeah.
You know, putting it in an investment and stuff like that. So
I think once you get into those subscriptions, you know, life happens, time goes by, and you're like, oh, I got another one, I'll go in and do it. And then something else happens and time right. goes by, and then you end up with it. So subscriptions, I think, is one that you could easily cut your budget just by going through your account right. and seeing what
I had about. To kind of give you an idea, you know, business owners, we have a company that we work with that goes in and looks at businesses' payables. And the guy was telling me, he said, we're working with a company and they had 30 locations. And they closed 3 of the locations down, and they were paying for internet and phone to the tune of $1,000 a month for
yeah.
3 locations for 3 years.
Wow.
Or
for 3 locations.
$100,000 just out the door. So it's always working like that, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
So just kind of go through, like Roy said, just to kind of recap opening up the show, we are doing a complete financial game plan. We're starting with a simple budget. That's where you got to start with. Getting rid of some of those debts that you really don't need. Subscriptions is one. You know, I don't mean to say anything bad about Comcast, but I mean, right. Comcast is pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And you've got alternative options out there with Roku, you know, Apple TV, those kind of things that really start to add up, especially if you have multiple investment properties or Airbnbs.
Right.
And you've got cable on all those. That could literally be $1,500, $1,600 a month that you're
right.
investing.
Right.
So go through your budget. Start small. You know, Roy had recommended, you know, this is going to be a question that I have, and I'm sure the listeners that are listening are going to have the same question. You mentioned having the same account with your spouse, and you have 2 different debit cards. He's got his allowance for a week. I've got my allowance for a week. However, if you're financially responsible, why wouldn't you use a credit card and pay it off monthly to earn points for flights and hotels?
I use a credit card. And at the same time, if you're trying to get ahead, you know, one of the ways you can do it is you can pay your credit card weekly
mm-hmm.
and do the same thing. Then you get your points.
And then you don't have the interest, right?
Well, if you were to take and let's say your weekly budget is $200, mm-hmm. you can pay $200 mm-hmm. that week to the credit card. And you actually have a credit balance, and mm-hmm. then you spend it down. But it's just a way to keep up with it because if you most people if they're trying to get ahead and they have a balance. Okay, their credit card, mm-hmm. debit card's the way to go.
Yeah.
So, hey, we're going to jump to the next segment. You're listening to Real Money Radio, and you can visit us at realmoneyradio.info. My name's Roy Matlock, and I'm with Tanya Escobel. We'll be right back.
Building up a generation, plant seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real money radio. A future you.
All right, we're back. And this is Real Money Radio. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. I'm here with Tanya Escobel. And when we first got started, I was covering some of the basics, which is budget, an emergency fund, eliminating bad debt, and a little bit we talked about insurance. Primarily, you know, if you have kids and all that stuff, you need to always protect your income and your assets. That could be, you know, it could involve life insurance, term life insurance. It could involve disability income. If anything happens to you that way, then you protect you got health insurance. Really is to protect not only your health, but it really protects your assets because some of the top bankruptcy reasons are, you know, no health insurance. Then we protect our home or, liabilities, stuff like that. And so that kind of gets us started. And if you're just tuning in, today is the complete financial game plan, and you can go to realmoneyradio.info and click either one of our names in there, and it will take you to an enormous amount of resources to help you learn. So now we've done this. Tanya is the extraordinaire when it comes to the home, you know, real estate business, mortgage business, you know, investment properties, things like that. So let's say I get started now. I've got my basics in place and I'm ready to go buy a house, or maybe I've got my basics in place and consider making adjustments, or even going into, you know, buying later. We'll talk about the long-term plan, which would be investment property.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you're out there looking for real estate, I'm going to kind of go through some troubleshooting things that people start backwards. And really you need to start at step one. Step one is knowing your budget. Really, is knowing what you can afford. Most of the time, 99% of the time, what clients do is they call a real estate agent and they want to go look at a home, but they don't even know if they can afford the
home. They need to go to a mortgage person.
They need to come to mortgage first. We have the money and we identify if you can get the money for the home that you want.
Right.
The worst thing to do is to go look at a beautiful home and then find out you apply for it and you can't afford it.
Right.
Because then you've got this mindset of, I wanted this home and nothing else compares to it.
Right.
So don't put yourself in that emotional situation. Find out what your budget is. Find out how much you can afford and make sure you get pre-approved. And most people think, I've got excellent credit, I can buy whatever I want. That's not the case.
The pre-approval, I've told people this for years and years. If you are pre-approved, I mean really pre-approved, not just you've got good credit, and it's like you're a cash buyer. Mm-hmm. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. So what we do at Cross Country, there is a couple of different things to talk about, because that's another myth that people think. My loan officer pre-approved me, or my company, my loan officer. Let's talk about what a pre-approval is. A pre-approval means I went online, I did an application, or I did it over the phone.
Right.
My loan officer said I'm approved based upon what he is looking at.
Right.
The person that stamps that approval when you go to clear to close is an actual underwriter.
Right.
So if that loan officer is maybe new in the business, maybe doesn't know his programs very well, maybe he's been doing it for 15 years, but just doesn't know the programs well enough because they change constantly.
Right.
Right. So if you're not skilled in everyday lending changes, then you can make a mistake as a loan officer.
So you can actually get, if I remember correctly, years ago, I could go to a mortgage company and get a commitment. Am I correct on that?
So a pre-approval letter is what literally 99% of loan officers do. They put a pre-approval letter out there. That is not cash.
Right.
That is just a loan officer's opinion. So you know how you hear those horror stories. Well, I was pre-approved and 2 days before closing, I got denied.
Right.
3 days before closing,
right,
I didn't qualify anymore. Or I had to extend my closing because they missed this and I've got to get more documentation.
Right.
That is because a loan officer is not an underwriter.
Right.
I was an underwriter, so I'm very detailed on the front end. I even have clients sometimes tell me, well, this loan officer didn't ask for all that paperwork. And I'm like, exactly. But they will once it goes to an underwriter.
Right.
I just prefer to get everything done on the front end.
Yep.
And if I don't need that extra documentation, I won't need it. But I want to know your entire financial picture.
Right.
So at Cross Country, what we do is we can take it one step further. We can do what we call fast track underwriting, which means it literally goes into an underwriter without a property. Most mortgage companies and banks, when I say most, over 90% will not allow a file to go into underwriting until there's a property, a contract.
Right.
And that is why you have these nightmare stories that we hear, because the loan officer didn't qualify them accurately. So we do a fast track underwriting. Now, when you get a fast track underwriting, that is truly an underwriting commitment letter.
Yeah, so now you're a cash buyer.
And that is a cash buyer.
Yep.
And you can negotiate as a cash buyer because your only contingency will be the same thing as a cash buyer typically, appraisal and title work.
Right.
Everyone wants to know the collateral is going to be valued and there's no liens or encumbrances on the title. So there you are negotiating with a cash buyer with an underwriting commitment letter.
So talk about the title, you know, about, you know, why do we get title insurance, and what is it when we go through and you say subject to the title?
So subject to collateral and title. Collateral is going to be your property. We're going to get an appraisal to make sure the value is there.
Right.
Title is going to protect you. It's kind of like an insurance policy on your car. It's just insurance on your home.
Right.
So what if there's a cloud on your title? What does the cloud on your title mean? That means maybe there was a transfer of a deed and an heir was never included to sign off on it.
Right.
So title insurance, if that ever comes up after you close and an heir comes out of nowhere, your title insurance will protect you from that.
So what would be an example of some things?
So a cloud of title is one. Another is, this personally happened to me. I bought, remember when the tornado came through East Nashville? So I bought a home, and it's one of my first investments. I think it was my second or third investment home I'd ever bought. And the tornado had taken literally half the wall, half the house was gone. And the title insurance gave me title insurance on it. However, the city had put a demolition on it.
Okay.
And I had title. So I was in the middle of remodeling this construction. I'd already spent construction money. So my title insurance had to settle that, and they had to pay me a premium, and they had to work it out with the government, metro right. government, for right. me to get it remodeled. So that's another example.
Probate
is one. Probate is really challenging. If you do know that, you know, another thing is too, goes back to a really good real estate agent. So you got to have your lender first. You got to get pre-approved. You got to know your options. You got to know your budget. One thing that I recommend people to do is, if you're paying $3,000 a month in rent and you go to a $6,000 mortgage payment, that's going to be a big jump for you.
Right.
So if we go back to budget, similarity, you know, step into something you're comfortable with. If you're struggling paying $3,000 a month, then you probably don't need to exceed that.
You know, I do my radio show and you do your separate radio show. Mm-hmm. One of the things I talked about in my show this week that's coming up is that if you're nervous, that's a sign. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you get ready, if you're kind of shaky, that's a sign. Maybe you need to back it off a little mm-hmm. bit. I would say, you know, get your mortgage payment to such a degree that it's just no big deal.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think clients don't understand is too, everyone has this perception. I got to put 20% down because I don't want PMI.
Right.
Well, you might be liquidating all your savings. You have no reserves at that right. point to fall back on if something happens in your life, which life right. does happen. So every $10,000 you put down only changes your payment about $20 a month. Wouldn't you rather have that $10,000 in savings, right. getting some type of return?
And I tell people that. They say, I'm going to go pay cash for a house. And I'm like, why would you do that? All right. Number one, all you got to do is equal the rate or a little more, which 6% now, something like that, and you're fine. But if you ever want to get that money out, mm-hmm. you got to go borrow it or sell the house.
You got to do a cash out refinance, yeah. Or do a line of credit, which is going to be tied to prime. You know, paying for your house cash, it is going to appreciate regardless. Why right. not have a mortgage on it? Get your tax benefit from a mortgage. Why lose that if you can?
And leverage.
A tax benefit, yes. Take that money instead of paying $500,000 down. You know, maybe you do $200,000, finance $300,000. Mm-hmm. Take that $200,000 and invest it properly.
Right.
Get a good stock plan in place. I mean, stocks are doing amazing right now.
Right.
So you're losing revenue by not diversifying your investments.
I've always believed, you know, you get a good mortgage. And one of the things I used to tell people, if you can afford a 15-year mortgage, then that kind of, if you can't afford a 15, mm-hmm. then you're probably going too high. But mm-hmm. then go ahead and do your 30 mm-hmm. and get your lower payment. But that's kind of a rule of thumb. I always tell people, hey, ask what a 15 would cost.
Yeah. And that's another thing to talk about too. A lot of people think you got to go from a 30 to a 15. A lot of times when we do refinances, and let's say that client's been in it for 2 years or 3 years or 1 year, instead of rolling them back into a 30, I roll them into a 25-year term.
Right. That's it.
So, and then that 25-year term is very minimum difference, but you're building more principal than you are in a 30 and you're not going backwards. So lots of things when it comes to making sure that you're talking to a lender and understanding that. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the complete financial plan right here on Real Money Radio.
Building up a generation, plant seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real money radio.
All right, we're back. Roy Mountain Jr. here. I'm along with my co-host, Tanya Escobel. And we are talking about the complete financial plan. We started the show with budgets, emergency funds, eliminating bad debt, buying the right insurance. Now we're in the home purchase side. And Tanya has been, you've been doing mortgage, how long have you been in the mortgage business?
Since 1995.
1995, so 30 years in the mortgage business, and we talked about qualified. Before we get back, I know we had, I asked you a question about, you know, clear title and probate. Mm-hmm. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so we were talking about making sure you get your money first, you get pre-approved, so you know what your budget is. That way, with cross-country mortgage, like 90-something percent lenders will not allow you to go into underwriting. So cross-country, we do. So therefore, you get an underwriting commitment letter, which means you can actually negotiate as a cash buyer. The two things that any cash buyer you would want in this situation is collateral and title work. So we were just talking about collateral, making sure that the appraisal's there, the home's in good shape, there's no, you know, major defaults or deficiencies with the home. The title work is another thing, it's an insurance policy that protects you. And you had asked me about probate, and I was saying that is where it goes back to, once you get your money in place, you've got to have a really good real estate agent.
Right.
And Roy, there are tons of real estate agents, but there are a very small percentage that are really good.
Right.
And the very small percentage does most of the business across the United States.
Right.
So you've got to make sure it's not just a friend of a friend. You know, really interview your real estate agent.
Right.
I mean, I have so many times people will say, well, they're a friend, I don't want to hurt their feelings. This is the biggest investment you're going to make.
I mean, you're they're negotiating for you.
Yeah.
And
it's your biggest investment that you're going to make. So make sure you have a real estate professional. I know a handful, and doing this market since 1997, there is less than 10 that I will recommend.
Right.
And I will. They are on my team as far as referral team that I will refer, but it is less than 10. So make sure you got a good real estate agent. Because let's talk about this. What if you have a probate? If a listing agent does not ask these questions when they list that home, go under contract, then title takes 2 to 3 weeks into the process, right?
Yeah.
So a week before closing, you're going to find out everything's in probate and we've got 10 heirs that we've got to deal with.
Right.
So now you're postponing closing. What if it's a back-to-back, sale, that's a domino effect?
Hey, probate can last
months.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good real estate agent, when they come to do a listing presentation, they're going to ask you what liens are on your property. They're going to ask you if there's, you know, anything that they need to know about the home. Has anyone passed away? Is it in a will? Is it in a probate? Those are good things that a listing agent needs to ask, so that way it is marked correctly in the MLS. And a good listing agent would refer them to their title attorney to already start working on that.
Right.
So by the time they did get a contract, most of that already been worked out.
Yeah, everybody wants easy, but sometimes you got to do things in advance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some other examples, when you're sitting there qualifying people for a loan, if they've got credit card debt, mm-hmm, and car payments and stuff like that, what happens?
So credit card debt and car payments, you know, it goes back to most people, all they know when they call to get a rate is, or a call to get a mortgage, what's your rate?
What's your rate?
I look at it as, what's your financial goals? What's your financial plan? Tell me what it looks like. If you're over here and you got $40,000 in credit card debt and you're going to sell your home and make $200,000, I'm going to tell you to pay off your credit card debt, put less down on your mortgage payment because you're paying 20-25% in interest. You don't get any tax benefit from. Pay that off to where mortgage at $40,000 more, that's probably going to be $100 difference in your payment, but you're getting rid of probably $1,500 in credit card debt, where you're just paying minimums and getting nowhere. And then you've got your tax benefit over here. So I look at it as structuring. I look at their credit debt. I look at their assets. And then I recommend around that to be able to make sure that they're paying less out of their pocket monthly, and where can they get the better tax benefit.
Yeah, and if they've got $40,000 in credit card debt, that's because they've overspent already, otherwise they wouldn't have it. And so that's, you know, when I meet with people as a financial advisor, I always ask the first question, what's your goal?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then my goal is to make recommendations that are in their best interest. And that's what you're talking about when it comes to,
and
you know, doing a mortgage.
I think that, I mean, even me personally, I don't like credit card debt. My husband has credit cards. He kind of does credit cards and auto in his name. That's another thing. If you are married, I recommend diversifying, because then it comes into your debt to income ratio.
Right.
So I do the mortgages in my name. He does autos and credit cards in his name.
Right.
Inflation killed us all. I don't care what income level you were at. We were all paying more for something.
Right.
And we were all accustomed to a lifestyle.
Right.
So, you know, discipline would have been to cut back on your lifestyle, but we are human. We usually just keep our same lifestyle, even though you cut a little bit here and there. We could not keep up with 40-year high inflation.
Right.
So even, I feel like even in our own personal life, we have more credit card debt than we have probably in 10 years.
Right.
So I've got a home, an investment home for sale. And when I sell that home, the first thing I'm going to do is pay off that credit card debt.
Right, right.
I feel that a lot of people are in that same position. They've got great equity in their home. Right. So that's where it goes back to sell that home. Don't put all that down on your mortgage. Get rid of that debt that's not the bad debt, as you called it in the opening of the show. Get rid of the bad debt. Get rid of the credit card. Or if you've got an auto loan and your interest rate is 2 or 3%, just make double payments on it.
Yeah.
Don't pay that off because that's a low interest rate.
Right.
So that, again, goes back to I will dig through and ask you what your rates are on certain things
because
and strategize. Rates.
So we have ratios when we're working. I mean, it's most of the loans. I'm assuming that Cross Country does this. You guys are selling the loans out on the open market.
We service them.
You service them too.
But we can do both.
But the point being is that a mortgage, if you're going out and you're getting a conventional loan, there are rules, you know, for your income, debt to income ratio, how much goes to your mortgage payment, how much is your total debt payment. How does that work?
So debt to income ratio is calculated across the board by every single lender, every single company. Where you see differences on calculation of debt to income ratio goes really to the knowledge of the loan officer structuring the loan.
Okay.
So, and I can give you an example of that, but basically let's talk about what debt to income ratio is. They're going to take all your credit report debt. That's going to be your credit card minimum payments. That's going to be your auto loans, student loans, installment loans. You know, if you have a boat, RV, those kind of things that are on your credit report. We don't get into utility bills, anything like that. It's just your core bills. Now, outside your credit report, if you owe the IRS a payment, we're going to count that against you, or if you have alimony or child support. So those are the three things outside your credit report that any loan officer should ask you on the front end.
Right.
It should not be a surprise going through underwriting because you know what's going to happen. They're going to see it in the bank statement, and they're going to be like, oh, what's this debit coming out? $1,000 every month or $2,000 every month. Yep. And then it's going to be, oh, I'm paying alimony. Well, that didn't, now my ratio is blown.
Yep.
So you take those core debts that I just mentioned, the proposed house payment that you're wanting, let's say your house payment in your neighborhood that you want to buy in is $500,000. We'll take the principal and interest, the property taxes for that county, estimated homeowner's insurance, because we don't have a contract yet.
Right.
And if there is PMI, mortgage insurance, we'll add that in. And that's called total PITI. We take your current debts that we just talked about, your proposed PITI, and divide it by gross income. That's the other thing, too. A lot of people think in our industry, why would you qualify off of gross income? Because I don't get to take that home.
Right.
So that's where you have to say, even though you qualify, that goes back to your budget.
Right.
We're doing gross income, which you're not getting gross income every single month. But that's how we calculate your debt to income ratio. So if you're maxing a gross income at a 49.9% debt to income ratio, you're really stretching your budget.
Right.
You're not going to have a lot left over for savings or a lot left over for lifestyle. But that is how you calculate your debt to income ratio. To give you an example of debt to income ratio challenges, we do this all the time. We call it deal or no deal on my show. And I've just kind of been known for this for years. If anyone can figure it out, Tanya can figure it out. So we had a client that, he was a past client of mine. He ended up buying in Florida. And, you know, he had a banker down there because sometimes Florida's a little different with non-mortgable condos. Even though we had him, he ended up doing something local. And so real quickly, he ended up going to this guy. Got pre-approved in November, went under contract 2 weeks before closing. The guy came back and said, oh, you're going to have to put more money down. You don't debt to income. He didn't know how to calculate tax returns. I know how to get an exception with the write-off that they were doing. And so we were able to get them pre-approved. And so
depreciation would be an example.
Depreciation is, but this had to be with notes receivable less than 12 months. That was what it was.
Got it.
Sorry, I was talking too fast.
I got you.
All right, we got to take a break. Stay tuned.
All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Real Money Radio with Roy Mountlake Jr. and Tanya Escobar.
No limit making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real Money Radio, a future you can hold. Real Money Radio will help your kingdom grow. You got a place to go. Real Money Radio. Real Money Radio. Real Money. Real Money Radio will help your kingdom grow. You got a place to go. Real Money.
We're building up a generation.
seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real Money Radio.
Welcome back to Real Money Radio. I'm Tanya Escobel with Roy Matlock Jr. I'm with Cross Country Mortgage, mortgage lender, real estate agent, probably for 32 years. Recently, real estate agent, though, and really just to kind of help learn that side of the business to be a better lending partner and also a better partner to my clients. And we've been talking about the complete financial game plan here today. We started with the basics, budget, eliminating debt, subscriptions, making sure you're protected with insurance, protect your assets. Then we moved into home buying, which is what I'm passionate about, been doing since, you know, 1995, talking about getting qualified. The difference between qualified, pre-approved, and an underwriting commitment letter. At Cross Country, we actually do a full underwriting commitment letter before you go out and house hunt, which is what I recommend. Right. Don't start with the house and then go backwards. We talked about, you know, title insurance or collateral and making sure that when you're a cash buyer with that underwriting commitment letter that you have those two contingencies in. Talked about making sure you're working with a really, really good real estate agent in this market. A really good real estate agent is going to ask you, is there a probate? Is there any cloud on the title? Do you have clear title? A really good agent would probably go ahead and have the seller, you know, get the title work to make sure. Right. So there's no surprises. Yeah. There could be a lien that maybe he doesn't even know that's on there.
Well, today, in today's market, it's not like, you know, it's now becoming a buyer's market. Would you agree with that? And so if you're trying to sell your house, you've got a lot of competition, and if you want to get your house sold and get a good price on it, I think that's even a bigger reason for the realtor to be on their A game.
It is, and like I said, there's a very small percentage that sell most of the homes across the United States. So it's one of the biggest investments that you're going to make. So I always recommend, you know, make sure you interview your real estate agent. That is key. I mean, you don't know how many times I have seen people leave $10,000, $20,000 on the table because they had the wrong agent that didn't negotiate properly. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of equity that you can walk into. So we do have a team of real estate agents that we know, we like, we trust. We know that they're good negotiators in this market. They stay on top of the market. And you can always get more information at realmoneyradio.info if you'd like to get some information of what we're talking about today in general. The one thing I wanted to move into about your home buying process, your underwriting commitment. If you are one of the things that I see a lot of mistakes is when you get into the condo world.
Okay.
So I had a client that came in, it was listed as a townhome, but I also know listing agents sometimes don't do that research that we just talked about, right? Ended up getting the title work. That's just what I do proactive on the front end to make sure. Sure enough, it was a condo.
So association fees.
Association fees will be of a townhome too.
Yeah.
The difference is in lending guidelines, if it's a condo, it has to meet Fannie Freddie guidelines or approved through FHA or VA.
Okay.
So it's a big difference. A townhome, you don't have to have that extra approval. So this was a conventional loan. We had to do a condo questionnaire. It came out that this condo did not meet all of the requirements for Fannie Mae. Now, because Cross Country is number one across the nation 3 years in a row, we sell a lot, service a lot to Fannie, I was able to get an exception.
Right.
But that's, again, goes back to if you've got a real estate agent and they put that MLS listing in incorrectly and you have a buyer, that would have blown up if it would have been with another lender.
Right. Right.
I mean, it took me 4 business days going back and forth with Fannie and my condo department to get that exception.
Yeah.
So that was one. Second referral from that same agent came in.
Okay.
And it was looked like a HBR, front house, back house, right?
Yeah.
Well, what did the developer do? He zoned it as a condo.
Okay.
The client was shopping me with Rocket Mortgage. It's a VA loan. It's not a VA approved condo. Rocket Mortgage didn't look it up. I told him because my client's the real estate agent.
Right.
And client still didn't come back to me, but my client in this case was the real estate agent.
Right.
She told her client to tell the loan officer, this is a condo. Okay. 3 weeks go by. They had to extend closing because the day before closing, they come back and said, well, it's a condo.
Yeah.
You should have known that 3 weeks ago. So not to say anything bad about online internet companies, they are telemarketers just picking up the phone.
Right.
They were even told by a local professional that it's a condo. You cannot go VA because it's not a VA approved condo. and they still did it anyway. So they had to flip everything to conventional last minute.
Yeah, there's always
all for an 8% interest rate.
There's always A players, and there's always B players and C players and D players, and we see this all the time. You know, some of the stuff that goes on in the financial world. I mean, it's that way. I do want to hit the last one. If you're self-employed and you're wanting to buy a house, or you're wanting to get your financing done, what are some key elements to that?
Okay, so that's a very big push in our market right now, and I'll talk to you about why. You've got to realize, baby boomers, Generation X, we worked 9 to 5.
Right.
We were W-2. I mean, yes, you did have few self-employed
right,
buyers.
Right.
Ever since COVID, and then you've got your millennials and you got the new generation coming up, they work from home. They're entrepreneurs.
Right.
So you have more self-employed buyers in the market than you ever have before historically.
Right.
So what do they want to do? They want to write off everything.
Right.
They don't want to pay taxes. You know, you want to protect
right.
your taxes, protect your money. However, when it comes to qualifying for a home, they write everything off and we have to go off adjusted net income.
Right.
Regardless, I had a client that has $1 million in the bank, put 50% down, but has no income on his tax returns. Fannie
right.
and Freddie, you have to cash flow
right.
that mortgage payment.
Right.
Regardless, now there's asset depletion, things like that, but $1 million is not enough to carry. You take that million times 70% divided over 30 years, at least, what, $800 a month
right.
to qualify? So in today's world, this started pre-COVID. It's probably been around 7 years, but last year it was 36% of our business across the nation. It's called non-qualified mortgages. What does that mean? It just doesn't qualify Fannie, Freddie, FHA, or
Fannie. Right. So you've got lenders that are investors that won't.
Well, we have our own non-qualified mortgages, plus
yeah.
we can broker to other investors.
Gotcha.
But it is such a big part of our business right now that we created our own non-qualified mortgages, which means I have control. I can get exceptions that other people can't because
right.
it's our own money that we're
right.
funding.
Right.
right,
right.
So with that, you can do a bank statement loan. So you can take business bank statements
yep.
and 12 months. You can do 12 or 24 months. I usually just do 12 months. It's just easier.
Shows their cash flow.
Shows their cash flow. And we take all those gross deposits, divided by 12, that's their income.
Yep.
That's easy to do. Now, most companies won't let you do personal bank statements. Our own cross-country mortgage will let us do personal and business on a bank statement.
Okay.
Because how many people are sole proprietors that don't ever open up a business account?
Right, right.
So we fixed that. That was a new thing that we rolled out 60 days ago. Well, what if you don't? Let's talk about someone that doesn't fit a bank statement program. Real estate agent.
Okay.
Developer. That one big deal, one big transaction. Got one deposit, $700,000 last year. Great income, but
right.
one deposit. In the bank statement loans, they want to see income
yeah.
consistently
right.
because they don't want to think it's a one-time deposit.
Right,
right,
right.
So that client does not work for a bank statement loan. That client could go for a 1099 loan. What's a 1099 loan? You take your gross 1099 times 90% divided by 12, that's your income.
Oh, really?
Look at any
okay.
of your expenses. What, if you don't get a 1099, you 1031 it. I just had a guy that literally, the guy got $700,000 one month, rolled it into a 1031. So he doesn't have a 1099.
Okay.
He can't do bank statement.
Explain 1031.
1031 exchange is when you have profit in a property and you sell it, and to keep from paying taxes on your gain, you roll
similar.
It into something similar. Yes.
Yeah.
And you have, I think it's 90 days.
Yeah.
So that is a 1031 exchange. So here he is, a real estate and developer, one-time deposit, can't do bank statement, no 1099 because he did a 1031 exchange. So now what is Tony do? Profit and loss loan.
Yeah.
Profit and loss means the CPA prepares it, but it's not audited.
Yeah.
It's what the CPA does. So he's going to do a 2025 profit and loss loan. Now, these interest rates are higher than a traditional loan because you don't fit the traditional box. But it doesn't keep you from buying.
Right.
And you have to look at it as this is just a step to get into the home that you want and to have home ownership or the investment that you want. In this case, it's an investment. He's wanting to do an investment cash out 75% because he paid the 1031. He paid cash for it, but now
right.
he wants his cash flow.
Yeah, he
to
wants
invest.
Some cash out.
Yeah, he wants some cash out. So a profit and loss loan would be the other option to do that and still end up with a decent interest
okay.
rate. So he was at 7 3/8. That's not bad for a 30-year fix, knowing that your average market right now is around 6 1/4.
Yeah.
On a
Fannie
Freddie. That's not that bad.
No, especially when you don't have anything to show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you have...
It's just a piece of paper saying how much you're making.
If you have a job, all right, then you get your W-2 and you hand it in and you take your credit card payments or whatever you have and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But self-employed, I mean, I've been self-employed my entire life. And, you know, we're always doing everything in our power to reduce our taxes.
Yeah,
right? And exactly. So, you know, it pulls back on that. So we've got about 2 minutes left, and I know we're talking about the complete plan. So I think this will be a good segment to go and continue, you know, on our next show, where we'll go in. We now are in this mode to where now you're understanding mortgages, which I think is the majority of people think it's just this simple little deal. And it is a simple little deal. If you got great credit and you work for somebody and you have, you know, you go in and, but the real mortgage people like what you do are able to look at things and help people get there. And right now, hey, if you're thinking about doing something, I think it's a great, you know, we're moving into a great buyer's market. I saw just in Nashville, you know, the listings just keep, you know, the, you know, the number of listings are way, way up. I mean, you know, better numbers than that. But.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that a lot of people are so caught up in interest rates and let's just wait until rates come down. When rates come down, if they come
if
down,
they
come yeah, down. That's an if they come down, you are not going to get the deals that sellers are giving.
Well,
right
yeah, because
sellers are giving anywhere from $10,000, $20,000, $30,000.
Yeah.
An interest rate drop 0.25% is not going to bridge that gap of $10,000 to $30,000 in equity that you're walking
into.
The
other thing that I tell people is you can't refinance your purchase price. All right, so whatever you pay for that house is what you're going to pay for it. You can always buy the house at the best price you can and refinance if rates go down. But honestly, rates are good. I mean, 6 is typical. I mean, if you go back, we got spoiled into this thinking it's going to be 3. It's not. It probably never will be 3 again for a lifetime.
I mean, it's really interesting because we were in the 2s and 3s and people were overpaying $30,000 and $50,000 for the house. And now those people are trying to sell the home and they overpaid for their home just because they wanted that 3% rate.
Yeah.
So then we go into, you know, through the Biden administration, we hit 8.5%.
Yeah.
That's a high rate. We're back down in the 6s.
It's good. 6 is good.
That is a healthy housing market rate because that means mortgage rates are healthy and stocks are doing good.
That's it.
When you have rates drop to, you know, 3%, then that probably means that stocks aren't performing as well. So 6% is a pretty healthy market for the stock market and also mortgage rates.
All right. So tell everybody about our new website so they can reach out to both of us if they need to.
It is realmoneyradio.info, realmoneyradio.info. It's got Roy's link on there if you want to get some information in regards to life insurance, financing, financials, retirement, stocks, bonds, those type of things. I'm more on the real estate side when helping you structure a mortgage, helping you identify the best real estate agent or the best builder that's out here in Middle Tennessee. Stay tuned right here on Real Money Radio, Super Talk 99.7 WTN.